Monday, April 3rd, 1944. My dearest Kitty, contrary to my usual practice, I'm going to write you a detailed description of the food situation, since it's become a matter of some difficulty and importance, not only here in the Annex, but in all of Holland, all of Europe, and even beyond. In the 21 months we've lived here, we've been through a good many food cycles. You'll understand what that means in a moment. A food cycle is a period in which we have only one particular dish or type of vegetable to eat. For a long time, we ate nothing but endive. Endive with sand, endive without sand, endive with mashed potatoes, endive and mashed potato casserole. Then it was spinach, followed by kohlrabi, salsify, cucumbers, tomatoes, sauerkraut, etc., etc. It's not much fun when you have to eat, say, sauerkraut every day for lunch and dinner, but when you're hungry enough, you do a lot of things. Now, however, we're going through the most delightful period so far, because there are no vegetables at all. Our weekly lunch menu consists of brown beans, split pea soup, potatoes with dumplings, potato kugel, and, by the grace of God, turnip greens or rotten carrots. And then it's back to brown beans. Because of the bread shortage, we eat potatoes at every meal, starting with breakfast, but then we fry them a little. To make soup, we use brown beans, navy beans, potatoes, packages of vegetable soup, packages of chicken soup, and packages of bean soup. There are brown beans in everything, including the bread. For dinner, we always have potatoes with imitation gravy and, thank goodness we've still got it, beet salad. I must tell you about the dumplings. We make them with government-issue flour, water, and yeast. They're so gluey and tough that it feels as if you have rocks in your stomach, but oh well. The high point is our weekly slice of liverwurst and the jam on our unbuttered bread. But we're still alive, and much of the time, it still tastes good, too. Yours, Anne M. Frank. Wednesday, April 5th, 1944. My dearest Kitty, for a long time now, I didn't know why I was bothering to do any schoolwork. The end of the war still seemed so far away, so unreal, like a fairy tale. If the war isn't over by September, I won't go back to school, since I don't want to be 2 years behind. Peter filled my days. Nothing but Peter. Dreams and thoughts until Saturday night, when I felt so utterly miserable. Oh, it was awful. I held back my tears when I was with Peter, laughed uproariously with the Van Dans as we drank lemon punch and was cheerful and excited. But the minute I was alone, I knew I was going to cry my eyes out. I slid to the floor in my nightgown and began by saying my prayers, very fervently. Then I drew my knees to my chest, laid my head on my arms, and cried, all huddled up on the bare floor. A loud sob brought me back down to earth, and I choked back my tears, since I didn't want anyone next door to hear me. Then I tried to pull myself together, saying over and over, I must, I must, I must. Stiff from sitting in such an unusual position, I fell back against the side of the bed and kept up my struggle until just before 10:30, when I climbed back into bed. It was over. And now it's really over. I finally realized that I must do my schoolwork to keep from being ignorant, to get on in life, to become a journalist, because that's what I want. I know I can write. A few of my stories are good. My descriptions of the secret annex are humorous. Much of my diary is vivid and alive. But it remains to be seen whether I really have talent. Ava's Dream is my best fairy tale, and the odd thing is that I don't have the faintest idea where it came from. Parts of Katie's life are also good, but as a whole, it's nothing special. I'm my best and harshest critic. I know what's good and what isn't. Unless you write yourself, you can't know how wonderful it is. I always used to bemoan the fact that I couldn't draw, but now I'm overjoyed that at least I can write. And if I don't have the talent to write books or newspaper articles, I can always write for myself. But I want to achieve more than that. I can't imagine having to live like Mother, Mrs. Van Dan, and all the women who go about their work and are then forgotten. I need to have something besides a husband and children to devote myself to. I don't want to have lived in vain like most people. I want to be useful or bring enjoyment to all people, even those I've never met. I want to go on living even after my death, and that's why I'm so grateful to God for having given me this gift, which I can use to develop myself and to express all that's inside me. When I write, I can shake off all my cares. My sorrow disappears. My spirits are revived. But, and that's a big question, will I ever be able to write something great? Will I ever become a journalist or a writer? I hope so. Oh, I hope so very much, because writing allows me to record everything, all my thoughts, ideals, and fantasies. I haven't worked on Katie's life for ages. In my mind, I've worked out exactly what happens next, but the story doesn't seem to be coming along very well. I might never finish it, and it'll wind up in the waste paper basket or the stove. That's a horrible thought. But then I say to myself, at the age of 14, and with so little experience, you can't write about philosophy. So, onward and upward with renewed spirits. It'll all work out, because I'm determined to write. Yours, Anne M. Frank.